initially it started with working with the corporations who donated the materials, the hardware, the software that we needed. Then we put together a team of archivists to develop kind of the action plan, devise what levels we were going to scan things at, the type of metadata that we would use. And then we chose the collections here that are most researched, that are, of greatest interest to the general public. And we literally hired staff to start scanning them page by page.
That seems like the most difficult, because you have so much, just a wealth of stuff. And to decide what's the best, the most relevant, luckily the public helps you a little bit, but that seems like one of the very, very difficult selections here.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's a collection here called the President's Office Files, and they are literally every piece of paper that went across his desk. The collection that has all of his handwriting, his doodles, the edits he made on his speeches and speech drafts. So it was pretty evident to us that that was the first collection to start with. Then we went to his personal papers, because people are interested in him as a president, but also, what was it about his life that led him to be the leader that he was. So it gets a little harder down the road to figure out the priorities, but the first few collections were pretty obvious to us.
Is there a different mindset that has to go into creating something like the Access to a Legacy, a web version of this, as opposed to having a place where people come and visit?
Not necessarily, because, suggested earlier, we devised from the start that this would be a systematic process and that we would do every single page. And we really are trying to replicate what a researcher, the experience that they would have in our research room. So we know how researchers go, and they go, file by file, and they look at every page and see not only the documents they're interested in, but while they're there, they want to see, what were the few pages before and what were the few pages after. So again, our basic strategy we followed, which is to take collections and literally have our scanners scan every page, and then have the metadata catalogers add all the metadata later.
And who do you envision being the main users of this? Is it researchers, or is it?
We want it to be both. It's devised like any search that you would have. You could do an advanced search, and so scholars who are looking at really the most esoteric questions can get those. And the great thing now is, with metadata, you can cross-reference various collections. So here, if you came, we'd have to bring down a certain set of boxes, and then you could say, well, is there anything in the Robert Kennedy materials, or is there anything in the personal papers related to this? Now, with a stroke of a pen, researchers will be able to do that. But we also envision, school kids to be able to listen to the speeches, download photos, make their own posters for classrooms. So really, it should provide access to the general public as well.
And, I mean, you do have so much stuff. Does the digitization process, easy for me to say, does that continue? Do you keep trying to get more and more stuff online so folks can continue to access, find even more wealth of stuff on there?
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, this is really just the tip of the iceberg, but we decided to publicly announce it, on this anniversary of the 50th of JFK's inaugural. So this is just the beginning. Again, we're, have about 250,000 pages and tens of thousands of photos right now, but we hope to continue up to, 1 million pages in the years ahead.
Do you have personal favorites? Are there things that are now online that more, one of the great things is many more people can have access to this than can really ever get there to Boston?
Right, exactly. Well, again, JFK had a secretly recorded taping system, the way President Nixon and President Johnson did. And so we have all of his telephone conversations. So those are really fascinating to listen to. And the example I used in a recent press conference is an exchange between him and former President Eisenhower at the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Looking at the photos and the Kennedy family home movies, again, we've had access to them here, but people just love to see that young family in the White House. So those are now all available on the website as well. And lastly, I love to look at the changes that he made to the speech drafts. He didn't write all of his own speeches, but he certainly significantly improved a number of them.
And we're approaching this year, the 50th anniversary of that very famous inauguration address. That has to be very popular to check out online now.
Absolutely, and people can see all the various drafts. So there's a handwritten draft, and that one, the famous line, he's working it out. So he says, ask not what your country is going to do for you, and then the next draft, it says, ask not what your country will do for you, and then when he delivers it, it's ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. So you can see the phrase getting winnowed down, and it's fascinating for people to look at.
What do you hope that people learn, people take away from this kind of a digital experience?
Well, we hope first that it somewhat democratizes history. So, you know, at this point, before we made these documents available, you had to really count on a historian or a journalist to come here and do the research for you. Now you can go directly yourself and make your own determinations about various aspects of the Kennedy presidency. But most of all, I think we hope that it reminds people of the story of John F. Kennedy, and especially his legacy and his call to service to the country, that we give back to our country and to our community, and that it's up to us to solve the problems of our time.
Did you did folks have not debates, but nice arguments about how to best display what deserves better location on a page? You know, those kind of, what should we play up? What should we not play up? There have to be those kinds of debates that go on.
Somewhat, but we want the site to first be somewhat intuitive, and then, again, the way Google and other search engines work, it kind of builds on its own memory. So if you put in an inaugural address and then you wanted to see certain documents, those documents will come up more regularly at the top of the list so that you gain from the experience of others and what others were interested in. And we hope that it encourages kind of that spirit of discovery.
Yeah.
And that's what's incredible about the internet, is you can start in one area and you click here and it brings you into other things, and you're, geez, I never realized that about him. And so we hope that really it just allows people to delve into the story of John F. Kennedy in ways they never could before.
And was there a mindset that, oh my goodness, we want to make sure that this is Googleable or Bingable or whatever search engine people use, this can get out there, because that's so often how people find their information?
That's exactly right, and we hope, especially on the 50th anniversary, those Google and Bing sites will bring people right to our site.
You have to have gotten a number of calls from other presidential libraries who are either somewhat down this path or starting down this path. Any lessons learned from the process of getting this done that you can share with them or with other organizations that have this kind of data?
Absolutely, and we've already started sharing those lessons with them. And again, I think the most important thing, I mean, first, we were so fortunate to have these four corporate partners, AT&T, EMC, Iron Mountain, and Raytheon, and we benefited greatly from their technical expertise. And then, again, coming up, as I mentioned earlier, with a game plan early on and sticking with it, following that same strategy, not changing course, I think has really been helpful to our success.